from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Politicians are supposed to be answerable and accountable for the things they've said. But what if their dreams seem fanciful, like turning a perpetually blue state red? California's Republicans gather tonight down the peninsula in Burlingame. And yes, they have quite a challenge, where the state's color will stay the same. The future of all things Republican forums focus in the hour ahead. How does the GOP at least get to purple, even if not to red? Answers after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Republicans got some good news this week, winning a special congressional election in Florida in a district that President Obama carried both in 2008 and 2012. And the unfolding national narrative seems to have the GOP holding on to the House and a shot at taking back the Senate. California Republicans, though, face a more daunting challenge. Jerry Brown is running for re-election at the peak of his popularity, and while the Dems have lost their supermajority in the state legislature, Republicans haven't held a majority of any kind in either legislative body for nearly 20 years. The state Republican Party gathers in Burlingame this weekend with the tricky task of changing the state's colors from blue to red. Joining us this hour to talk about the state Republican Party convention and the future of the party in this state, Bill Whalen, research fellow at the Hoover Institution, a contributing editor at Hoover's Advancing Free Society blog, and a regular columnist for the Sacramento Bee, also a former speechwriter for former Governor Pete Wilson. Bill, good morning. Happy to have you join us.
Morning, Dave.
Duff Sundheim joins us as well, former chair of the state Republican Party from 2003 to 2007. Duff, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
And Harmeet Dhillon joins us as well. She's vice chair of the California Republican Party, chair of the San Francisco Party. She joins us on the ground in Burlingame. Harmeet Dhillon, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
And Scott Schaefer is here, too, reporter and host of KQED's The California Report, co-host, of course, of Newsroom on KQED 9. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Scott, set us up for the task that is taking place just down the road, down the peninsula in Burlingame.
Well, the theme for the convention this weekend, Dave, is rebuild, renew, and reclaim. And I think that the emphasis is really on rebuilding. Jim Brulte, who's the new party chair, is what he calls a nuts and bolts chairman. He's avoiding the media, if you can imagine that, and really working behind the scenes to first of all, get the party out of debt, to rebuild some credibility, to recruit more candidates who look and sound like the people in the districts that they're running in, building a bench. I mean, some really fundamental things that almost like a startup would do. And they realize that they're not going to win the governor's mansion back this year. And so they're really, I think, and these gentlemen can expound on this and maybe contradict me if they want, but I think that the focus is really on the down ballot, on the fundamentals, putting in place the kind of fundamentals that will give the party a second chance, that will give maybe Californians a reason to look at the party again, take another look.
To the extent that there isn't even what you would expect in a election year gathering, a debate between the gubernatorial candidates, and you're suggesting that that's quite intentional, that that's not where the focus is.
Well, you know, the Jerry Brown, of course, is in extraordinarily strong shape going into the November election. There's no challenge within his own party. He has two relatively unformidable challengers in Neel Kashkari and Tim Donnelly, the assemblyman. And so I think – I don't know if they'll say that, but I think most party officials would prefer to see Neel Kashkari get the nomination. There isn't going to be an endorsement at the party convention this weekend, but I think they're looking for different kinds of voices and faces for the party. And I think that they don't necessarily want to elevate those races, those statewide races. They want to focus on the things that they've done right, like in San Diego, where they just picked up the mayor's seat with Kevin Faulkner, a moderate Republican down there. Andy Videk, state Senate seat snatched away from the Democrats in an open election last year. So I think those are the things that they want to focus on.
Scott Schaefer joining us this morning from KQED Public Radio. Harmeet Dhillon, vice chair in Burlingame this morning as the convention is about to get underway. Do you concur with Scott's assessment that the focus is not on top of the ticket, that in fact you're really saying we're not going to win the gubernatorial seat back, we're going to work at the from the ground up?
Well, those two premises are not mutually exclusive. We are focusing on the down ticket races that we believe we can win. We're in a very strong position on a number of those. We acknowledge the fact that any sitting governor, Republican or Democrat, who's an incumbent with $17 million in the bank is going to be hard to defeat. And so the focus of our energy is definitely on those other races. That's not to say that we've written off the statewide races that we're competing in, but we are being realistic.
But it would seem, if you're not even having those candidates, you know, speak or debate in front of the convention, that that's hardly your prime focus.
They are speaking at the convention on Sunday. They are not debating. We are not in the business of picking a winner in that race. After Prop 14, it's the voters who pick who is going to go to the general election.
Dev Sundheim, as a former chair, do you see it the same way, that you really need to focus on developing candidates from the grassroots up, that that's the primary task for your party right now?
Very much so, and also to get our message out. I think that really the Democratic Party in this state is increasingly tied to policies that are out of step with the people in this state. If you look at the control that the public employee pensions, public employees have on the pension system, on the education system, our difficulty of getting even convicted criminals out of the classroom. There are a lot of issues that really we identify more with the people of California, but that R after our name is still a big problem in this state. And that's due in large part to some of the stuff that we've done here, but much more so what the national image of the Republican Party is.
And how do you change the meaning of what that R stands for?
Well, I think that Scott touched on it, winning races like Andy Vidak, winning the mayor's race in San Diego. There's a Republican that is the mayor of the largest city in the country held by a Republican. So those types of elections, having those types of people, having much more Latino representation, much higher percentage of people that represent their community, more women candidates, those will move us in the right direction. But it's going to take some time. Although I like to quote Tom Hayden, says in politics, things happen really slowly, except when they don't. And you look at 2002, it looked like we were dead. And within 9 months, we had a Republican governor.
Although in some ways you could make the argument, Bill Whelan, that phenomenon, the Schwarzenegger phenomenon back in 2002, is in some ways endemic of the challenge that the party faces. You've observed that there's been this tendency, at least in recent years, for the gubernatorial candidates in particular to sort of parachute in, to drop in from on high with lots of money, whether right. That's Schwarzenegger, Meg Whitman, even Bill Simon. Right. Is that part of the issue, that it needs to happen at a different place?
Yeah, it's part of the challenge. In a past life, I worked for Pete Wilson when he was governor of California. Pete Wilson's first campaign was 1966, running for the assembly the same year Ronald Reagan was elected. So by the time he ran for governor in 1990, he had a quarter of a century in elected office at the assembly, the mayor of San Diego, the United States Senate, a really pretty impressive record to move in as governor. The Republican Party has to be in the business of building a bench. We can talk about needing finances. We can talk about grassroots organizations and getting out the vote. But you need players in the game. You need a bench. You need people with the experience of running an office so that people can get elected to local levels, like, you know, deputy DA in a county. Then they can run for the legislature, they can run for Congress, and then run for statewide constitutional offices. Being a party of a shortcut is a wildly hit or miss measure. Sometimes it works wonderfully with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Sometimes with Meg Whitman, it doesn't work so well.
How do you do that? How do you start at that very basic level, getting people interested in whether it's the state assembly or you know, county supervisor?
Well, Duff can attest to this because he's been in this role, and Harmeet can as well because she's doing this now. But you have to target younger people. People who are interested in politics, people who are generally committed, have a passion for public service. And then the trick is you have to steer them toward the right race. There is what I call in the state Senate fever, gubernatorial flu. Everybody wants to go for the big job at first. And so you have to find a way to say that, look, there is a certain nobility in running for a local office, running for the legislature, get hands-on experience.
Dev Sundheim.
Yeah, I think that one of the big problems in this state is potential candidates come to us and they say, look, I'm running against a candidate that already has millions of dollars because of the public employee unions and their coffers. So you have to show that you have a structure in place that can support them. We've been able to do that in Santa Clara County, and we've doubled the number of Republicans that are elected in Santa Clara County. Those are all in nonpartisan races, but we've had the resources to support them because we've had an effective program. You need to replicate that throughout the state. You need to show them that you're going to give them the financial support because things are weighted so heavily in the Democrats' favor because of that public employee employee union money.
Hermie Dillon, Scott Schaefer was describing Jim Brolte's new role as sort of the nuts and bolts approach to that. Is that that sounds very much like the theme of what you have to focus on, that in some ways the less news you make, the better. The more you focus on things that are kind of under the radar is exactly what the party needs to do.
Very much so. You know, we've taken our lumps in some of the recent elections, as my colleagues here have mentioned, because we've had some candidates who didn't want to go through the discipline of running for office and rising up the ranks. And there's really no substitute for that, just like there's no substitute if you want to be a doctor going through your residency program. I mean, politics is hard business. And so we are in that position where we're behind the eight ball and we're doing that hard work. It's going to take two or three or more election cycles for us to get back to the position that we'd like to be. And one of the other challenges we face this year with statewide office races is that it's a huge state with a lot of major media markets, and it takes, you know, $15, $20 million to run for governor just to deal with the media side of it. So when you don't have the power of the public sector unions behind you, you are starting with a huge numerical disadvantage.
Scott Schaefer, how does the party, do you think, or how would you suggest that the party might come to terms with who the state is? I mean, you know, this is not your father's state. You know, it's a different place now with a different population, a largely Latino growing population. How does the Republican R hook up with that?
Well, you know, Harmeet Dillon talks about a numerical disadvantage in the public employee unions and money, but the real numerical disadvantage is the demographics of California. Sometime this month, if it hasn't happened already, Latinos are going to surpass whites as the largest group in California, and that's been happening for a long time. And, you know, it's 20 years this year that Prop 187 was on the ballot, and Pete Wilson was running for governor, running for reelection, and that very now infamous TV ad ran. And that really pushed awakened the Latino electorate, and it pushed a generation, maybe two generations, away from the party. And so they need to begin addressing that, and they are. Hector Barajas, who is a young up-and-coming GOP consultant, started an organization called Grow Elect, which is recruiting young Latinos to run for office, helping them win, Latinos and Latinas across California. And, you know, it's a process. It's not a two or three election cycle process. I mean, this is really something that's going to take, as Jim Brolte says, up to maybe 10 years before the party really begins to have a chance with these minority voters, Asian voters, Latino voters in particular.
You know, it's so interesting. If you looked, the Democrats had their convention last week in Los Angeles, and you saw some fissures within the Democratic Party as well over some issues.
Fracking.
Activists disagree with the governor on fracking, and Governor Brown is against marijuana legalization, which is kind of looks like a train has left the station in California across the country. I think more so than 2014, because we're assuming the governor is going to get reelected. 2018 is shaping up as a real turning point in the state in a lot of ways, with an open gubernatorial seat and both parties, I think, being in a position to kind of, you know, change their outlook in some ways.
I'm interested, though, in this question of literally changing the face of the Republican Party. Duff Sondheim and then Hermie Dillon on that question. If I were to drive down to Burlingame this afternoon and walk in the door, would I see a different looking Republican Party, or is it still going to look largely as it has looked in recent years?
I think it's going to look like it has in the past, but we're spending a lot of time down, for example, in the East San Jose community and the Latino community, and we're recruiting candidates because they're understanding that they want a better future for their families. And given the teachers' policies, they're not getting the education they need to compete in today's environment. Until we resolve the immigration issue that Scott referenced, we're going to have a hard time with that community. But once we get past that issue, and we obviously at some point need to, I think that the average Latino is more conservative than the average Republican today. So once we get past that, I think that we will have a brighter future and we will get people that will come to our side. But what is interesting is there is that fissure that Bill referenced in the Democratic Party. And you saw it on display. You saw Governor Brown being booed. You see the Ro Khanna. You see Marshall Tuck running against Torlakson. You're seeing a real fissure. And with the open primary, what I think you'll see over time is what I call the governing coalition, which is going to be a combination of pragmatic Democrats, independents, and Republicans that are really going to take control of this state.
And I would add, you know, another fissure that the Democrats are going to have to deal with is this pension reform. platform. It's already become a divide within the party. You saw Chuck Reed down in San Jose promoting a ballot measure, which now looks like they may not go forward with because they didn't like the title and summary that the attorney general put on it. And there was a court decision against them. They were challenging that just yesterday. But, you know, that is something that where you've got this increasing pressure on not just state but local budgets to pay for retirees and health benefits. And that's pulling away money from things that other Democrats care about, like education and environmental policies and, you know, all those things. So that's a real fight that's going to be continue to play out in the Democratic Party.
Harmy Dillon, where do you see those vulnerabilities in on the other side? What are some of the soft points that you think are ripe for some exploitation on the part of your party?
Well, I want to correct one thing that Scott said, which is that it was Hector Barajas who started Grow Elect. It's actually Ruben Bareilles who started Grow Elect.
Hector says he co-founded
it. We have more than one Republican Latino consultant in our party. That's part of the problem that I guess, you know, people don't know that. People like Scott and others don't necessarily know that. But if you come to our convention...
Actually, Harmeet, I think I'm correct, but go ahead.
If you come to our convention today, you're going to see a number of Sikh Americans delegates to the party, a number of Latino delegates to the party, and you're going to see African-American delegates here at the party. And the problem is that perhaps we don't do enough talking about them and sending them out into the communities, but more importantly, recruiting candidates from those communities. And we're doing a much better job of that now, but it's going to take some time growing through the ranks. In terms of the vulnerabilities on the other side, I think very plainly what you're seeing on display here is the dominance of the Democratic Party has led to complacency in California. And those Latino communities, those poorer communities, those Asian communities who want to send their children to schools are finding a gross failure in the public school system, are providing adequate education to those children. We have a high poverty rate in the state. We have a high unemployment rate in the state. And you have to remember that Ronald Reagan won with a coalition of Democrats who were disaffected with the Democratic Party and the same tired messages that the Democratic Party was feeding them for years. I think you're going to see the same thing happening in California if our party takes the opportunity and advances the correct message to those voters.
But on the other hand, if you look at what the governor can now run on, he's taken a state that had $25 billion deficit to now having a surplus, a state that had over 12% unemployment to one that's still high but much, much less at 8, state that just passed a new funding mechanism for education. I mean, there are a lot of things that the governor can put on a bumper sticker that you can't, right? Harmeet Dillon?
Well, we're not I think governing by bumper stickers is a failed approach, and you know the voters are more sophisticated than that, so they want to see people in their communities who are going to make sure that the schools are good, who are going to make sure that the roads are fixed, who are going to make sure that they aren't being taxed out of existence or regulated out of existence. So it's not about bumper stickers.
Well, first of all, I mean, he has done some things that have improved things in the short term, but there's an incredible long-term cost to those short-term gains. For example, he increased the level of taxation. The result is Tesla is not going to build their new facility. Tesla, who's the green beauty, is going to be developing their manufacturing facility outside the state of California. You have Charles Schwab, who's moving their facilities outside. You have people that want to make the environment better, like Chevron wants to upgrade their facilities so they're polluting less, but the environmentalists won't let them do that. So there is this kind of, you know, I watched Downton Abbey and I see their inability to embrace the future. And we have the same type of environmental movement here in California. We're stuck in the 1970s. CEQA was good in 1970, but we can do much better now. We can build much more efficient buildings now. And we have to embrace the future. We can't be afraid of the future. And right now, while Brown's doing a good job, the average Democrat in this state is locked into the 1970s.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is that there was a – seems to me that one distinct advantage that the governor has at the moment at least is that he seems like the adult in the room. After a long period of sort of dysfunctionality in Sacramento, it seems like certain things have actually happened in a way that at least advances the state to being something other than a place of paralysis. Is that a fair assessment, Bill Whalen?
Well, it is. I mean, the system truly works for his advantage. First of all, he doesn't need need a two-thirds majority to pass a budget anymore. Since the Democrats have two-thirds majorities in the chambers, that's a done deal. Second, because of term limits, it's not like he's going into a room having to negotiate with somebody formidable like Willie Brown at the risk of insulting the current leadership in the legislature. Jerry Brown can run circles around those folks, and so he can control it. And he's smart. This is his third term on the job, headed for a fourth, so almost any crisis he faces, he's been there and done it. But in terms of running against him, I think the challenge for the Republicans is to turn the focus beyond 2014 and even beyond 2018 and beg the question of whether or not the governor is answering long-term problems such as pensions, as Scott referred to, or if he's just going to be a second-term caretaker governor, if you will.
Bill Whalen joining us along with Duff Sundheim, Harmeet Dhillon, Scott Schaefer as we explore the future of the Republican Party and its upcoming state convention this weekend in Burlingame. We're going to open up our phone lines as well. We'd love to hear your participation in this. What do you think ought to be the focus of the Republican Party as it continues to try to get back to being more on its game in this state? What can it do as it faces a popular incumbent in Jerry Brown? You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Scott Schaefer.
Dave, I would love to hear what Harmeet and especially Duff have to say about the nomination. I know that you're not focused on the gubernatorial race necessarily, but you know, as you try to reshape the party, what difference would it make to have Tim Donnelly, who is the founder of the Minutemen, standing down at the border with rifles to prevent illegal immigration? What difference would it make to the party's strategy of trying to rebrand itself if he's the nominee?
Well, I mean, I'll speak to that. I think it's unfortunate that the media often caricatures people like Mr. Donnelly, like Mr. Kashkari, into one box. And so there are a number of people in California who believe in the right to bear arms. There are a number of people in California who are very concerned about illegal immigration and the state's inability to deal with that. It's really more of a national issue. Similarly, there are a number of people in the state in our party who would love to see a minority like Mr. Kashkari, who has a finance background, be our nominee. So the voters in our party and the delegates here in Burlingame today are more sophisticated than just putting people in a box.
Well, I don't think Scott's question was so much to put them in a box, but asking you, I think, a legit question, Duff Sundheim as well. And when Scott posed that question, you sort of looked to the sky for guidance.
I was deferring to Harmeet. I don't feel the need for divine intervention, at least at this point. Well, I think that it's really not going to make that much difference. I think, you know, it's not going to unless Tim or Neil are able to really generate some publicity and some funds, I think people are going to reach the same conclusion that we seem to have reached here today, which is it's not going to be a competitive race. If it becomes a competitive race, then I think, you know, his profile, whoever gets the nominee on our side, their profile is raised and they get more scrutiny. But I think the emphasis is going to be elsewhere.
Would it be easier to rebrand the party with one nominee or the other?
Yeah, probably. I think Neil's positions are a little bit more in line with the average Californian, but, you know, I think that's up to the voters to decide.
And Bill Whalen, it sounds like your focus would be, if you were running Neil Kashkari's campaign or were called in to advise, would be make it a fair fight, make it a good fight, but your focus isn't so much on winning as it is positioning for the future.
It is, and I think if you're a Republican statewide candidate in 2014 this is one of the litmus tests for those candidates. Are they willing to run in 2014, take their lumps, and come back again and run in 2018? Because it's not going to be a, you know, win on the first time. It's going to take two or three shots at it to victory. So if I'm running Neil Kashkari's campaign, and boy, that is a scary thought if you're Neil Kashkari, I turn it into a generational campaign because Neil is, I think, 40 or 41 years old, and Jerry Brown is 75, I think, going on 76. And at the risk of sounding like an ageist, I think you just have to point out that the governor has differences with his own party. But again, the question of where the governor is taking California, because as you look at California into the 2020s, into the 2030s, there are just a host of issues that we're going to be facing in terms of our resources, in terms of our population, in terms of our ability to run a government and fit 50 million people into a rather limited space. And what Jerry Brown has done in his first term is answered immediate problems, but nothing beyond his term expiring in 2019. So try to push him into those big picture things.
And when we come back, we'll talk more about those big picture things for Republicans, for Democrats, and for the entire state as we look forward to the election in 2014 and beyond. You can join us at 866-733-6786. How do you see the future of the Republican Party? What are the opportunities in 2014 and beyond? 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the California Republican Party is holding its convention this weekend in Burlingame. We're talking about the party's convention, but also its future, both in the upcoming election 2014 and beyond. We'd love to hear your thoughts on that topic, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our website or our Facebook page. We'll start with Levi, who joins us from San Francisco. Levi, go ahead.
I'm in my 30s, biracial, gay. I was calling in to suggest that I think when I look at the Republican Party as an independent, I don't see a place where I can fit in. And to suggest that there will be a few black people or sick people or gay people visiting a convention to represent me doesn't always match up with, I think, the message that I hear out of a lot of Republican Party members from other states as well. It gets a little confusing as to whether or not we're looking at a Tea Party or a Libertarian Party or a economic conservative party. The message seems a little bit lost in social conservatism lately and has just pushed most independent people I know away, especially California.
And what would appeal to you, Levi, as someone who's self-described as an independent? What would appeal to you?
Mainly if I were ever going to look at the Republican platform as a little bit more open to my thinking, libertarianism primarily would be the angle at which I would look at it. It doesn't appear to be a very libertarian party. Californian Republicans may be an exception, but you've got to realize that this party has become lumped in with everything from Bill O'Reilly to the Tea Party, like it or not. You know, and that scares away a lot of people, I think, who are just open-minded, young, diverse people that want the government to just move out of the way.
Yeah.
We're no longer looking to it to support our lives. That's not happening. We realize that we are not pro-war. We are not pro-spending. We are not pro, you know, regulation. And some of those things could be Republican ideals,
yeah,
but it seems like they're pushed out of the way a little bit by some intense social conservatism that turns a lot of people
Levi,
off.
Yeah, Levi, thank you. You've raised an interesting point and perhaps an interesting opportunity. Harmeet Dhillon.
So, Levi, if you had voted in the last election for the Republican candidate in your assembly district, you would have voted for a young gay Republican, Jason Clark, who's my vice chair on the county party. And last night, our county party met and endorsed John Dennis for running against Nancy Pelosi in this upcoming election. He's a self-described libertarian who supports many of the things that I think you do. So all politics is local, and while it is true that we have candidates in other states and candidates in other parts of the state who may not share your views, I think you'll find that our party is sensitive to the fact that the candidates we run in Orange County are very different than the candidates we run in San Francisco County, because the populations in each of those counties are different. And so I hope that voters will think about giving us a chance and not judging San Francisco Republican Party based on what might happen in Arizona, which is very different.
Scott Schaefer wants to.
I'm open-minded to the variety, and I think most people are, but asking about what the Republican Party as a whole can do, you know, that is a national party. We can talk about individual candidates, and that's certainly what everyone will vote on primarily. But if you're asking about that R at the end and what the problem is and what's changed, that is a national idea.
So. Levi, thank you. You've raised a really interesting point. Scott Schaefer wants to join in.
You know, I think the problem with the idea that all politics is local is that if you're voting for Congress, it's a local congressperson, but when they go back to Washington, they're going to vote for their party leadership. And at this point, if you're, you know, a gay person in San Francisco looking at Nancy Pelosi versus somebody else who happens to be gay, you know, you see the leadership of the Republican Party in Washington defending DOMA still and all kinds of other things that they may not disagree with. And so I think sometimes those issues trump some of the local issues or just sort of libertarian kinds of attitudes that they might have.
But just to push further on this question that Levi's brought up, because it is interesting, but because it raises the question of demographics, among other things, question of age and the libertarian appeal, which I think is real among a
huge
lot of young voters. Duff Sundheim.
Yeah, very much so, especially here in San Francisco. I mean, you're seeing it play out with all the young people who actually go to work on buses, yet they're very controversial. You know, they're trying to be environmentally sensitive. But I think Levi's right. We do have people in this state that do reflect the diversity of the state. I mean, look at Condi Rice is going to be speaking this weekend. Carl DeMaio down in San Diego is one of our rising stars, part of the gay community. And there is the problem, though, of the national image. And the image of the party is dominated by the leadership. And right now, we don't have a Republican governor to reflect what the values of California, of the California Republican Party are, and we don't have a president that reflects the mainline values. So you tend to get a more conservative image. It is a major problem, but we are working at it, and we're working at it very hard.
And it is one of the great chicken or egg questions of politics. Which comes first, the movement or the individual? Did Ronald Reagan show up first and then Reagan's ideas, or Reagan's ideas and then Ronald Reagan? And this is what the party is grasping with moving forward. And Duff's absolutely right. The Republican Party suffers in large part in California because it's a headless horseman. It doesn't have that avatar to point to other than perhaps, say, Ronald Reagan. But Ronald Reagan has been off the stage since 1989, so we've got to find a 21st century
version.
And
you need Levi, right? I mean, you need people like that who are willing to give the party a look and say, yeah, that actually reflects what I think.
You need Levi and a whole host of other positions, of other people out there, because the Republican Party is, what, at about 29% or 28.5%, 20, even lower than that, perhaps. And you cannot get 50% in a statewide vote with that, starting at that low number.
Some comments coming in on our website. Beth writes, as a former registered active in the party Republican, I'm baffled at what the party has turned into. The fact that California has the lowest number of registered Republicans as it has ever had, one wonders if there are any sane California Republicans who can sound the alarm for the rest of the country when it comes to the fact that older, white, conservative, grumpy Republicans are sinking fast in numbers, whereas the Spanish-speaking, under age 30, Asian, gay, lesbian, female, and non-religious are now the combined majority who will be calling the shots come election time, very much along the lines of what Levi was saying as well. Bob writes, we need a decent conservative party, one that has the credibility that can point out the folly of Jerry's high-speed cost rail and to the train from nowhere, or the folly of a $16 trillion national debt. The greatest harm the Republican craziness has caused is one-party rule. And Greg says, what is the California GOP doing to lure the Latino vote? They haven't been very successful at that so far. I would argue that the GOP shoots itself in the foot with respect to Latino issues. Bill Whaley, you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, but as someone who worked with Pete Wilson, does it all go back to Pete Wilson and that's still the harm that is causing the appeal for Republicans within the Latino community?
187 was the beginning point of it. And then I think what worsened the situation was the governor's race in 1998, where Dan Lundgren came out and first thing out of the chute, he announced that he was a proud pro-life Republican and was going to make abortion a litmus test in the election. And about a million women walked away from the Republican candidate in that election. Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger got back the women's vote when he ran in 2003 and 2006, but we struggle with this as a party to get women to vote for us. And so, well, you know, Latinos are certainly a focus. It's more than just Latinos. I'd say it's also women.
Xavier writes in, I've always wanted to ask Ms. Dillon if non-Christians, including atheists like me, are welcome by the National Republican Party. All the Americans of Indian descent in the National Party leadership either converted to or were born and raised Christian. Will we see a Sikh ascend to party leadership outside of California anytime soon? Hamid Dillon?
Good question, and I think the answer is yes, and I'm evidence of the fact that in California, I'm the first one to be in party leadership, and as California goes, so eventually, maybe a decade or two later, goes the rest of the country. Increasingly, you're seeing a number of people rise through the ranks. We have a congressional candidate in Santa Clara County, Vanila Singh, who's Hindu, and we are going to be seeing other candidates come up through the ranks. And that's how leadership happens. It doesn't happen overnight. It happens with people raising their hand, volunteering to register voters outside their temple or outside a citizenship swearing-in ceremony, running for their local county leadership, maybe running for office, and then eventually heading a state party. It's going to happen. It's just, I'm sure, when other immigrant groups came to the country, they weren't the first ones to be the Irish-American head of the party or the German head of the party or the Polish head of the party. It will happen over time.
Bill Whalen.
Little footnote there. California has had an atheist governor. And that would be Colbert Olson, who was elected in 1938. I only know this because Olbert holds the distinction he is the last first-term governor to fail to be reelected to a second term, in part because on his first day he took the oath of office and refused to say, so help me God. And reporters asked, why did you not say this? He said, words effective. I get into trouble. I don't see God bailing me out.
Wasn't he also governor during the internment?
He was governor during the internment, and by 1942, along came Earl Warren, and out he went.
And what party was he?
He was a Democrat.
Well, there you go. future bright stars out there? I mean, when we talk about the appeal to people like the people who are writing in and our first caller, Levi, do you see, as you're looking around the state, Scott Schaefer, as you cover the state, do you, Duff Sundheim, see bright stars out there, people who can be the kind of candidate that would appeal to the people who are writing in this morning?
I think it's going to show up as part of a movement. You know, they will come out of that movement. And the movement is there, and the foundation for that movement is clearly being set. And Levi touched on it tangentially. We have the Democratic Party that is still stuck in the 1930s. Obamacare was a 1930s program. It confused.
But almost a million people have signed up for it here in California.
Absolutely. Well, what's their choice? I mean, but they're still not making their numbers. And especially they're not making their numbers with the key demographic, which is the young people. So you have a system that's based on providing insurance instead of coverage. Well, what's the difference? Well, when you have car insurance, you don't use your car insurance to buy gasoline. And so you've created this system that has totally distorted the market. And who's going to be hurt the worst by this? It's going to be the people on Medi-Cal. You have doctors leaving the Medi-Cal system in droves. And so you're putting more people into a system with fewer doctors. So if you look at, we need to use technology to shift power away from these sclerotic institutions to the individuals, much as is what's happening down in Silicon Valley. But you don't have the technology of Silicon Valley being embraced by governments. You can see throughout the state, they're refusing to allow the technology to come in, allow businesses to come in, to allow development to come in for that will be much more efficient. And that's out of step. So you need to find the leaders to match the issue,
but we clearly have
the issues.
So where are they? I mean, I'm just curious to ask the question. I mean, where are these bright young stars? Why don't I know their names?
Well, in part, a lot of them are down in the Central Valley and the Inland Empire, which is not exactly the KQED listening range.
Right.
California Port is
California
there.
California Report. There you go. I think you have to look at some of these members of Congress. Our challenge is getting them to leave the majority in the House and save seats to come out to what is an uphill campaign here. And then secondly, you're going to have to go out and recruit from the private sector. And while, you know, I lamented earlier about people parachuting at the top, there's nothing wrong with someone from the private sector running a little further down the ticket.
You know, part of it, it's a little bit of a digression, but part of it too is, you know, running for office and being in office these days is not that appealing to a lot of people. And if you've got a lot on the ball and you've got other opportunities, whether it's in business or medicine or law, you know, it may not be so enticing.
And the really cool thing is there are so many young people today that are very actively involved in the community, but they do not see holding government office as being to solve the problem. They're taking the problem into their own hands, whether it's applying an app or working for a nonprofit. So they are addressing the issues that we're facing in very innovative and productive ways.
And that's one of the ironies of the California situation. Let's say that you have considerable finances and you have a pet issue, be it pension reform, education, what have you. Do you want to spend that money and run for an office and thus be one of 40 in the state Senate, 80 in the legislature, or hold a statewide office? Or would you rather take that money and earmark it into an initiative?
Well, we have a real live actual candidate who is calling in. So George Yang is calling in, candidate for lieutenant governor. George, go ahead.
Hello. Hello, Duff, and hello, Hamid.
Hi, George.
Hi, George.
Hi, George.
Well, I actually live in Menlo Park, well within the KQED range, so I am not from Central Valley. And I am 30 years old, and I am an immigrant from China. So I just want the people to know that the Republican Party is not as wide and old as some people make it out to be in Central Valley. And I'm right on the coast, actually.
All right, George, thank you. Thanks for the call. Here's another question from Gary who writes in a question for you, Harmeet Dhillon, and for Duff Sundheim. Will Californian Republicans continue to obstruct the urgent need for major policy change related to energy and in the obvious climate change? We're going to hit 90 degrees this weekend. Is this an issue that the California Republican Party needs to sort of step perhaps in a somewhat different direction than the party has nationally?
Well, I think that there are two sides of this. I think clearly the environment is a major concern and it needs to be addressed. But you have a situation where, again, people want to build a refinery and they can't do it because the environmentalists won't let them happen. You have a CEQA, which is a 40-year-old statute that's totally out of touch with
CEQA being
the state environmental quality legislation. And you can't get that updated. So I think that, we do have this knock as being anti-environmentalist. But I think, to be honest with you, I think our policies in a lot of ways will lead to cleaner air and cleaner water. And those those are need to be our objectives, not holding on to policies that are 40, 50 years old.
Are there some issues that could be embraced that might strike people as being perhaps atypical for the Republican Party, but that might resonate well? For example, some people have come out in favor of boosting the minimum wage, that would actually be something that would make a lot of sense. What about supporting the president's initiative for overtime pay or you know, are there things like that that would be a bit sort of Nixon goes to China like that might strike people as being, well, that sounds interesting.
Let me give you one, Dave. Yeah. Rick Perry and Grover Norquist, two people not to be confused with Republicans name only, support the Obama administration's effort to take away mandatory punishment for nonviolent drug offenses. So this is Perry, the very conservative governor of Texas, who's probably running for president. Grover Norquist, whose tax increase is a litmus test for Republican candidates. I don't see what's stopping California Republicans from falling in line with those two.
But I think, you know, things like the minimum wage, which are, you know, I don't think there are too many Republicans that should say we don't need a minimum wage. The question is, what is the appropriate minimum wage and how do we set it? But I think that it's really – that's – not dealing with the major problem. The major problem is we don't have an education system that educates our children. We require them to go into a system every day that is failing. That is a travesty. That is a civil rights issue of our day. We need to address the education system. And by merely increasing the minimum wage, we're not going to be addressing the major issue. And the major issue is our educational system.
Back to our calls. Peter in San Francisco is next. Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just digress for a second. I mean, I just got to say the ranting about Obamacare, about the environmentalists, about the schools is the kind of messaging that it's kind of a turnoff, but we'd love to hear what your solutions are. My question was about term limits. It was a passing reference earlier about how term limits has changed the game, not only for the Republican part, but in general. I'd love to hear more from your callers about how that has changed not only the Republican Party, but just the overall experience and the effectiveness of governance in California. I think it was a terrible change in our political history, but I'm wondering if the Republican Party has changed its tune on how term limits should be perhaps modified or even lifted in the future going forward as you're rebuilding your party.
Thanks, Peter. Harmeet Dillon?
Well, I'm in favor of the term limits. I mean, if you actually go to Sacramento and spend a few hours with the members of the state legislature, and, you know, I'm not going to single out one party here, but it's not the best and the brightest going there. And, I mean, you know, one of the issues here is that it's not a place where one can, you know, it's not inspiring with the single party ruling Sacramento. And I would, in fact, be in favor of term limits in Congress. I'd be in favor of encouraging more people to go into office as a part-time thing, as something they're taking out of after having a good career, and returning to the private sector or returning to a different position, and giving more citizens opportunities. Right now what we have is career politicians, and even with the term limits, it's never that they just go to the Assembly for one term or two. They go to the Assembly, and then they go to the Senate, and then they hang around and do this other job, Board of Equalization or something else. It seems like you send somebody to Sacramento, they never leave. And as a result, we aren't getting fresh blood in there. So I think I'm definitely in favor of keeping the term limits.
Bill Whalen.
I think I'd take the opposite view, and I think I'd blow them up for a couple of reasons. One is you just have this dance of the lemons in Sacramento where lawmakers, after they finish their term limits, they jump into a statewide office, and so you have the spectacle of a Bill Lockyer who's been in Sacramento for 40-plus years just because of that. I would say this, first of all. The problem with lawmakers right now, too many have lack of experience, and so they're far too dependent upon their aides and lobbyists for direction, number one. Secondly, I just believe in free choice, and paraphrase Obamacare, if you like your lawmaker, keep them.
So you would take the more libertarian, going back to Levi for a moment, point of view would be you decide when you vote, not by statute.
I just blew up the system. I think the system worked better back at a time when you had the likes of Willie Brown in there for a couple of decades and had the institutional knowledge to balance against the governor.
Scott Schaefer.
Well, we got this other reform that's sort of eating away at term limits in a way, which is the top two primary, right, which both parties hated. But you saw Eric Swalwell knock off Pete Stark, who'd been in Congress for a very long time, and now we've got Ro Khanna challenging Mike Honda down in the South Bay. And that has a whole other different set of implications and ramifications.
And a challenge for state superintendent of schools as well, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's giving – it is giving voters another opportunity, and it kind of brings decline to state voters and, you know, Republicans in big Democratic districts more of a reason to pay attention to the race. And so it's – and it's, you know, it's generating some interesting races and results, I think.
We have a call, actually, on that topic as well. Paul, go ahead. You wanted to comment on the top two system.
Yeah, and I would just say there's just so much disingenuous stuff being said. It's outrageous. But the top two primary is the most one of the most undemocratic thing that's happened that the two incumbent parties have foisted on us.
Well, I don't think they foisted it on you. They hate it.
Yeah, right. I'm sure. Yeah, because it excludes the Green Party, the Libertarians, the Peace and Freedom Party, any independents. We have 20% of the voters who are declined to state. They're not represented in, you know, if their candidate doesn't get past the primary because they don't have millions of dollars to spend from corporate slush funds that the Republicans and Democrats, you know, feed off of. They don't have the ability to get into the debates. They're excluded. It's outrageous. I mean, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are both very undemocratic. Let's put that out there. And then, you know, for the comment that, oh, the Democrats are in the 1930s. Well, I guess that's better than the Republicans being in the 1870s.
Okay, Paul, thanks. Sure. Thank you. I actually want to get at something Paul's raised, though, about the, isn't decline to state still the fastest-growing part of,
absolutely.
You have to find those folk?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I disagree with Paul. I think that people just need to change their focus. I mean, one, he's totally wrong. The parties were totally against this. I mean, Nancy Pelosi still is
the top
very,
two.
Is against the top
jungle
two.
Jungle primary there.
Yeah, absolutely. But from my perspective, I honestly think it helps the Green Party, whatever. What they need to do is they need to change their focus from the November election and really focus on the first round. And in the first round, where you have more people competing, really competing, that gives that third-party candidate the ability to make it into the top two, where they really were they weren't getting elected under the current system.
Harmeet Dhillon, chime in if you would on the decline to state question, because that's a really interesting phenomenon that's been going on now for some time in California, and about how you can sort of reach those folks.
Well, it is, and you know, I agree with Duff that actually the jungle primary, much as I frankly disliked it when it came into power, gives more people chances in the June primary. But when you look at the recent success of Kevin Faulkner in San Diego, the Republican Party is not the number two party, not the number one party. Certainly, it's the number three party after decline to state. And so Kevin Faulkner was able to win over the Democratic well-funded machine by winning those decline to state votes. And that's going to be an increasing factor in every single competitive election. You're definitely going to see that in the Mike Honda, Ro Khanna, Vanila Singh race, and you're going to see it in a number of other races throughout California in this election cycle.
And I think it also reflects our society. You know, in the old days, we used to have three networks, three different car companies. Now you have almost unlimited choices. The same thing's true in politics. People don't feel necessarily tied to one party. They're saying, look, you know, earn my vote, which I think is not a bad thing.
Bill Whalen, I want to go back to something you raised earlier, which is another demographic. We haven't really talked about that much, and that's women. And Sally writes in, the Republicans have made it clear that they wish to regulate women's medical decisions. What will change in the California Republican platform to demonstrate that it respects women?
Well, they ran a woman for governor in 2010. They ran a woman for the U.S. Senate in 2010.
Treasurer.
Ran a woman for treasurer. So it's not like we've been excluding women from the process. I think it's an ability for the candidate just to speak to issues that concern women. And this gets into other groups, most specifically Hispanics. We seem to think that there is one issue, one set of issues for one minority group. And so I have to go into the barrio and talk about one thing because it appeals to Hispanics. I think when you actually sit down and you survey the state and you look at different groups, you find there are common concerns. And what are those concerns? The concern is, number one, the economy, the ability to have a job. The concern number two is education, so your child can climb the ladder. And three, your quality of life, your cleanliness of your environment, the safe neighborhoods. And so I think that Republicans just need to find that common language with groups.
Sally also writes in, Rick writes in that he wants to know what Republicans are for as opposed to just what you're against. Duff Sundheim?
Well, very much so. I mean, we're for cleaner air. We're for cleaner water. We're for better jobs. We're for a better education. One of the earlier callers talked about, well, what would you do in terms of education? Well, I would allow for competition. Look at what happens in the Bay Area, where you have competition between Cal and Stanford. You have incredible innovation. Why not bring that to the lower levels? Why should a teacher have job security for the rest of their life after 18 months on the job? Why can't we get people that are charged with committing felonies out of the classroom? There are certain things that we can do to dramatically improve our educational system.
Bill Whalen.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Republicans, the most watched races this fall will be across the country, the U.S. Senate races. If the Republicans can win 7 or win 6 and get back the Senate. The Republicans can very easily run as the party of no and maybe get back the Senate. That's running against Obamacare, as we saw in Florida this past week. But the question is, what happens come 2015 when you vote to repeal Obamacare and the president doesn't go along with that and a host of other things? So I think the Republicans in this cycle have to come up with this set of ideas, a mini contract with America, if you will, and start espousing those beliefs and put them in the conversation. Then in 2015, start working those through Congress to, again, work on this identity issue, which we talked about.
Hermie Dillon, what do you want people to pay attention to? You were decrying earlier that the media tends to put things in boxes and not pay enough attention to what's really being said. What do you want people to pay attention to this weekend in Burlingame?
Well, I think, you know, jobs is sort of job number one for the Republican Party. In California, the governor can stand on the stage and shamelessly say that he's turned the state around, where we have one of the highest poverty rates and joblessness rates in the country, and that's laid squarely at the feet of Democratic legislators and the governor with their regulations. So I'd love to see people in power in Sacramento right now cut some of those regulations, allow Silicon Valley innovators to hire people, allow women to work 10-hour days, 4 days a week, as they've been calling for, rather than forcing the 40-hour, 5-day week on people, and allowing all those people more opportunities, allowing immigrants more opportunities to start businesses, allowing people to come into the state and work with guest worker passes, things like that. So there's a number of positive things that we can be for, and we are for, and if we were able to get our message through to more voters, then more people in California would benefit.
And Scott Schaefer, what are you going to be watching for, not only this weekend, but in the election year ahead? What fascinates you, I guess, about how things may evolve in this state?
Well, I do think, you've got we talked about the fissure within the party. You've got Gavin Newsom recently coming out against high-speed rail. He's now leading the charge to look at legalizing marijuana. And so you've got this next generation. You've got a retirement of Congressman Miller and Waxman down in Los Angeles. So you've got this generational change that's happening within the Democratic Party. And that's going to be interesting, I think, to watch and see how it plays out. But really, I think until the Republican Party nationally changes its image, it's going to be very tough for the Republican Party. They may pick off races here and there, like the race in San Diego, for example, is a special election. Same with the Andy Vidak race, low turnout. So the question is, can they expand that to a broader stage in the coming really election cycles?
And more from Scott on this, both on the California Report later today and on Newsroom tonight on KQED9. Scott, thank you. Thanks also to Hermie Dillon, vice chair of the California Republican Party, Duff Sundheim, former chair of the state party, and Bill Whalen from the Hoover Institution, columnist for the Sacramento Bee. Thanks all very much for our conversation this morning. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. Danny Bringer, our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.